it's quite an informal kind of event, and so if anyone feels moved to ask a question while I'm talking, please feel free to do so. As you said, I just published a book with Verso last week called The Threat to Reason, which looks at the ways in which ideas from the Enlightenment might be relevant to modern-day controversies, prominent amongst which is obviously 9/11. I worked as a publisher, and I also published a couple of books in related areas. I published a book called 9/11 Revealed a few years ago. And last year I published a book called The London Bombings by Nafis Mossadegh Ahmed, looking at 7/7, which we're going to talk about. We'll see a movie on later. First of all, I want to ask a couple of questions just to get the kind of measure of the audience. How many of you believe the official account of what happened on 9/11? That's a resounding vote of confidence in the official story. How many of you heard of the acronyms MIHOP and LIHOP?
Yeah.
Okay, a few. And how about the magic bullet theory? Who's heard of that? Okay, so there are some people. Kennedy buffs, maybe. Okay, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on 9/11 or 7/7. There's a great deal of work being done officially and unofficially, and I'm not pretending to be an expert on it. I do think there are reasonable grounds for intense skepticism about what happened, not least because the official accounts are incomplete, internally contradictory, and they change over time. To give one example, from the July 7th attacks, the government, in the immediate aftermath of the attacks, said that the people who were involved in the 7/7 attacks were clean skins, that they had no record of them on their files. And it was very important in establishing the absence of culpability, that there was no paper trail or no connection being made by the intelligence services to these people. It's now become clear that, in fact, they did have Sadiq Khan, the leader of the bombing, under surveillance in the context of an investigation into the so-called nightclub bombers. These people have just been convicted of planning attacks on London nightclubs. That's not a minor matter by any means. The Intelligence and Security Committee of the House of Commons said last year there were no, what they put, culpable failures in MI5's conduct in the run-up to the attacks. But they said that on the basis of information they'd been given by MI5, which did not include the fact that they had this gentleman under surveillance. So under circumstances, I do think a great deal of scepticism is appropriate. But what I want to raise tonight really is what would be a legitimate or either an enlightened response to the scepticism. What would be a sensible way forward? Because obviously, issues concerning 9/11 and 7/7 feed into issues concerning the war on terror, and above all, they connect with issues concerning the invasion of Iraq. I want to make a couple of obvious points. We live in the UK, we don't live in the US. We're not in a very good position to start investigating what happened in 9/11. Furthermore, most of us aren't investigative journalists. We're not the sort of people who knock on doors and ask difficult questions. And there are issues about training, there are issues of professionalism, there are issues about putting yourself in danger. And I think that in a lot of these areas, if you start trying to investigate what may well be a crime scene, or certainly a crime scene, there are issues of prudence and there are issues of what we're capable of doing as private individuals. There are some very important things that we can do to clarify our understanding of Islamic militancy in the UK. There's a great deal of work being done. A chap called Mark Curtis, who's a very good writer, is at the moment writing a book about the links between the British and American states and the rise of Islamic militancy in the Middle East and in Europe. And it's a long story. It goes back to the origins of the Cold War. It goes back to Eisenhower's rollback and his use of the Muslim Brotherhood in the 1950s. And it goes further back to the creation of Saudi Arabia by the British, where they made a happy alliance with the extreme Islamists of the Wahhabi sect. So I certainly think there's a lot more that we can do to find out exactly how our state has been functioning within in this context. and to try and undermine the idea that we're facing an external threat. Clearly the threat is not simply external. The threat is integrated, the word is interdigitated with British state institutions and American state institutions. I think there's a great deal more that we can do to establish a clear narrative, a clear chronology of what happened on 7/7 and its background. The Shadow Home Secretary, David Davis, has said that the case for an inquiry, an official inquiry, is overwhelming. And I think that we can do a lot more to make that clear to a wider public. But I'd like to argue that there are important areas where we can, as private individuals, without specialist training, without the time, the wherewithal, or frankly the foolhardiness, to start knocking on doors and asking questions. And I'll give one example. The BBC is talking at the moment about putting its entire news archive online, making it available to the public. Now, that means that as private researchers or public researchers, however you want to describe ourselves, we can look at BBC footage from September 2001 up to the invasion of Iraq, and we can start to figure out at first hand how the war was sold to us. And we've seen from that film there that with some fairly straightforward editing software, you can put together a fairly convincing presentation. Now, I don't want to prejudge it, but I suspect that if you go back and look at the bulletins, you will be astonished at how credulous and naive much of the coverage was in the immediate run-up to the war. There's a cover story being put out at the moment. They're saying that, oh, there was plenty of stuff. There was plenty of dissident voices on the UK media. There's no way that we were shut out on the anti-war movement. Well, that's simply not the case. The anti-war voices that were put on were extremely cautious. They tended to come from the Liberal Democrats, who had a very narrow spectrum of concerns. And I think that you can probably put together a fairly astonishing presentation, a 30-minute, a 60-minute, or a 90-minute documentary, which is entirely fair about how the BBC covered the issues running up to the invasion of Iraq, but which entirely undermine the notion that we can rely on what is, after all, a state broadcaster. So I throw that out as one thing that perhaps we can do without necessarily getting too caught up in the details of events that did take place in a foreign country, and which are obviously hemmed in by issues of state secrecy. At the moment, if you're talking about 9/11 and 7/7, you're very largely dependent on what the state is prepared to tell you, or on the claims of a relatively small number of more or less reliable or more or less credible whistleblowers. So I think we should be very wary about imagining that somehow there'll be some breakthrough moment where we find out the whole truth of what happened. There's a danger, I think, that 9/11 in particular acts as a kind of flytrap for the imagination. You start to think, well, there's something wrong. And then you focus more and more on the idea that if you can just find that killer fact, if you can just get that one piece of information out to the public, then the walls will come down. And I think that that's a very, very dangerous kind of state of mind to get into. So going back to the idea of looking at the Iraq coverage, the kind of media analysis of what happened in the run-up to Iraq, by no means, I'm not saying that's all we should be doing, but I put it out there as one possibility. I think it would be possible to demonstrate that what they were saying at the time, I put that in italics here in my notes, at the time what they were saying was clearly untrue. There was no excuse for a lot of the claims they were making about weapons of mass destruction. No excuse for a lot of the claims they were making about Saddam Hussein's capacity to threaten his neighbours and indeed to threaten UK interests directly. Another point I wanted to make quickly was really to make a point about presentation and about the importance of tact. There's a very important, very interesting document that came out from the 1960s from the CIA, talking about how they could defuse criticism of the Warren Commission report. And in part, the memo reads, "We do not recommend that discussion of the assassination question be initiated where it is not already taking place." If you're going to challenge state and corporate descriptions of the world, you have to be very, very aware of the need for tact. If you start making what sound like radical or off-the-wall claims, it's very easy to dismiss you and say you're part of a lunatic fringe, you're being irrational. And so, in a sense, the more serious the claim you're making, the greater the need to dress smartly, talk softly, and to behave in moderation. The final thing I wanted to sort of mention to you, as you mentioned, I've just published a book which looks at the Enlightenment. Writing in the early part of the 17th century, a philosopher called Francis Bacon said a very interesting thing. He said, "Men have been held back as by a kind of enchantment from progress in the sciences, by reverence for antiquity, by the authority of men counted great in philosophy, and then by general consent." Well, if you look at natural science, the situation is ambiguous, but a great deal of progress has been made. People no longer believe just what they read in Galen and Aristotle. They progress on the basis of peer review, on the basis of experiment. But I think when we come to the question of political and social and economic analysis, to a very large degree, I think we remain in the darkness. We do find ourselves held back by general consent. There is a temptation to avoid certain subjects because we're concerned about what one might call reputational implications. We also find ourselves held back by men counted great, not in philosophy so much, but in what they almost ridiculously call political science. And also antiquity in the form of one 19th century political economist in particular, Karl Marx, can also narrow and control the ways in which we respond to events. So, in the face of this darkness, in this state of large scale, I think, incomprehension about the mechanisms of the dominant institutions in society, there is a standing temptation to start to construct your own version of events, to construct a competing story. And I suppose what I'd like to do is to urge on you the importance of caution in this. If you go prematurely against the official version of events, which is after all being elaborated constantly by states and corporations with an enormous amount of energy and ingenuity, there's a danger that you'll be incorporated into a system of entertainment, infotainment, which is after all avid for conspiratorial storytelling, whether you look at The X-Files or you look at a phenomenon like Loose Change, which is another 9/11 film which I believe is going to have a studio release in the United States. There's a sense in which the dominant institutions quite like this line of reasoning. They quite like the fact we come at them too early, we come at them with speculations. So what I would urge us all to do is not to race, but to take calm assurance from the fact that we can establish the facts, and that we shall know the truth, and that the truth will set us free.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any questions?
I've got a query about the film we've just seen.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it seems to me to weaken the case. First of all, we're given a whole lot of facts. And then it moves on to something from 1976, someone deploring the fact that we just take for granted what television tells us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of interpreted. And then there's these sort of fictional, sort of perhaps revision of what might happen. But, I mean, those seem to me all separate. It seems to me weaken the case, to put them together.
I hold no grief for the movie makers. I think that, I guess that they were trying to make suggestive points. I think that that's the light in which you should watch that movie to a large degree. I think.
But, I mean, it's relevant to the sort of thing that's going to be put up to support the case. They are trying to make. Do you see what I mean?
Ro, can I ask you to pass me my drink, which is on that table over there?
Can I make a direct response to that?
Yeah, of course.
I think what you're saying kind of proves what he was saying.
Yeah.
The point is to take your time, do it properly. And as a filmmaker myself, I see that as like a first cut.
Yes.
They've had loads of ideas.
Yes.
It's much too long. it needed to be reorganised, it needed to be chopped down, made into something much more evidence-based, with people speaking for themselves, using the original footage where possible, and so forth, instead of just throwing in five ideas in a random order.
I think you're right, I think a lot of that could have been a PowerPoint presentation, but it could have been flicked through a lot quicker.
But probably they ran out of time, they ran out of money, they ran out of energy, and they needed to start making a living or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is currently working on a new version of it, apparently.
Right.
And I mean, I think the use of the kind of Star Wars clip and the V for Vendetta clip and the other clip from I can't remember the name of the other film is I guess it's kind of aimed at the kind of pop culture audience.
Yes,
and that's what they're trying to do. I mean, it's not something I'd have done. I mean, I haven't actually seen any of these three films, and you know, maybe I should. But
I think that's right. I think that with an event like 9/11, it is possible to bring to people's attention a great number of anomalies and a great number of sort of spooky gee whiz facts. But there's a very long road from that to developing a serious account of what happened. And as I mentioned, for various reasons, I think we should be very sanguine about the idea that we can really hope to get a serious alternative account off the ground. These events are shrouded in official secrecy, whatever their nature. As I say, I mean, I think there were some elements of that film are fascinating. I think the connection with Jack Abramoff is something I was unaware of. Jack Abramoff features in what I write about because he was heavily involved in manipulating evangelical Christians for the pursuit of private gain. And again, that's another area where I think...
Dan, I was going to say, one of the things I noticed about having looked into 9/11 truth is that you never find the reassurance that you're looking for in the mainstream media that that this stuff is pretty relevant and a lot of it true. And so in a way, you know, Loose Change has had 100 million, they say, 100 million views. I think what a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement are starting to do is give up on relying or holding out for the BBC to suddenly go, oh, well, look, everyone, you know, it looks like the towers were blown up with explosives. And I think that the internet certainly seems to be a way that people can do their own journalism now.
I agree. I mean, I do agree. I think that in important respects, the internet is an incredible enabling technology. One should be careful, I think, about imagining that what one's doing on the internet is always, as it were, first-cut journalism. But in terms of collating material and presenting it to a non-expert audience on video, for example, the technology has huge potential. I mean, I'm ambivalent about Loose Change because it is kind of a melting pot of things that are interesting and suggestive and things that are pretty off the wall, I think. And we could talk about it in more detail, but as I say, there is a danger that it becomes a form of entertainment, becomes a form of infotainment, and that it's rather easy to dismiss it on those lines. And there are areas of open research where we're not hemmed in by official secrecy, where you can do a lot more damage, a lot more quickly, to the notion that states and corporations are reliable or truthful. Yeah.
But isn't it important that we're actually, even if it is infotainment, as you said, but if the message is being put across in the way that people are going to listen and watch as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are quite a few documentaries, just one which you don't think you deeply do. There's just like a conference which is just like very long and, you know, yeah, important to watch, but, you know, unless you actually do it in a way that people are going to actually watch and listen, then a lot of the time your message is going to be lost, and that's what's really important here at the end of the day, is the message.
The issue of how the information is received and understood is a terribly important one. If it's seen as being another X-Files special, which young people kind of get into and some radicals get into, and the public dip into, but which takes place parallel to political activism. It's something you can believe or not believe. You know, are you a Catholic Protestant? Do you believe in 9/11 was a conspiracy? Then one shouldn't hold out, I think, for it having a huge radicalizing potential. For this reason, that it becomes subordinated and subsumed into an entertainment economy that's perfectly capable of handling it. Going back to JFK was seen for many people as being the Holy Grail. If you could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was impossible to fire those shots from that location with one gunman, then the walls would come down. You know, suddenly everything would be over and we could all move to a bright new tomorrow and the Republic would be saved. Well, the House Committee on Assassinations reported that he probably died as a result of an assassination. There's been endless ballistics reports saying that the official story is bullshit. Most people in America think he was killed by a conspiracy. The walls haven't come down, nor are they likely to, on the basis of, as I say, this revelatory moment where we can suddenly establish the scene of crime and establish who the culprit was. I think one should be very careful of hoping for that kind of moment of revelation.
Knowledge is power at the end of the day.
Yes, knowledge is power, but it's important to register that a lot of what was being presented as knowledge isn't really knowledge. You know, it's the way that it's sourced is extremely varied. Some of it's completely copper bottom, some of it's highly speculative, some of it amounts to a kind of poetry of events. The fact that Mohammed Atta was on those gambling ships is interesting. Does it link him to the Republican establishment and the really dark lobbying that was going on?
But isn't that part of the point of the way that these stories are used and abused, that there's some copper bottom facts and then there's other stuff which is presented sometimes in films like this as if it was just as important, just as definitely proven or whatever, but then, you know, for somebody else it's clearly easily disprovable.
Yeah.
And so you end up with this melee of facts, fiction, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can just,
I think that's right,
rule out somebody for believing one fact by virtue of another fact, and next thing you're all a bunch of conspiraloons over there.
Exactly, and it comes down to this issue of reputation. I mean, if you're looking to affect change, if you're looking to challenge what's being done in our name, after with our money, a lot of the time, does it make sense to start at, as it were, the heart of darkness? It makes sense to start at the exact point where official secrecy is at its most dense. Because a lot of what they do has to be out in the open. If you do a media analysis of what the BBC were putting out 2002, 2003, there's a sense, no ifs and buts about what they did. It's a matter of public record what they said, what the claims that they made, and the stories that they were telling, and the themes that they were developing, either unwittingly or in conscious collusion with the state. There you move beyond, as you say, this sort of soup of facts that may or may not have some documentary basis, that may or may not be true. And I suppose my sense is that if you're going to find out, you're going to make serious breakthroughs about 9/11, you're going to do it starting elsewhere and working towards it.
The sense, like, I've tried to tell various people around me about 9/11 being an inside job, and the reaction I always get is one of sort of, no one really wants to get too into the details because there's so much information to digest, so they're sort of overblown by everything that you've got.
Yeah.
And that's they're left kind of like, well,
you know. But it goes back to this issue of tact and care. You know, I think, you know, I've learnt from having sat at my computer in the middle of the night reading more or less disreputable internet sites and racing off to tell my friends about the truth about 9/11. You realise that people switch off very quickly if you come at them with what are often sort of disparate facts and suggestive kind of implications to facts and so on. And again, given that so much has been written about 9/11, so many people have churned over the ground and come up with their own theories, and that there is so much misinformation out there, there are probably better places to start. Hi.
I was wondering if you've read a book by someone called Ian Henschel.
I read it, I published it.
Oh, you published it?
Yeah, and in fact, with the lawyer's help, we wrote quite a lot of it.
Oh,
That's not true. I took some things out. Sorry.
How different is yours from his? What is the difference in the take on?
Well, they're two authors there, Ian Henschel and Roland Morgan, and they have a different take. I mean, they represent two wings of the 9/11 truth movement in a way. One of them is concerned with deep politics and the kind of the history of collaboration between states and criminal entities and terrorist groups. And the other one is much more interested in the physics of what happened. So was there a controlled explosion, and did planes really hit the Pentagon and so on? For what it's worth, and it's not worth a huge amount, because, as I say, I'm not an expert. I mean, I'm more drawn to the kind of what Peter Dale Scott calls the deep politics of 9/11. I'm more interested in collusion between the Americans, the British, the French, and God knows who else, with al-Qaeda and al-Qaeda-type organisations, relationships between Pakistan, and particularly Pakistan's Secret Service and al-Qaeda. I think that there's more to be gained from that kind of analysis, because there are names and faces and dates. There's a problem with a lot of the material that takes a more physicalist line. But I, as I say, I don't hold myself. I wouldn't consider myself an expert at all on it. Yeah.
After
this one.
Thanks. I think I hear what you're saying about the danger of waiting around for the big story to sort of break on the BBC. But I think we have to remember that if there was a conspiracy by the CIA or like whatever it was in 9/11, that is hugely important, because it's affected all of our lives.
No, I completely agree with that.
And I also think that... if you say, you know, if there's this feeling that sort of people are still presented with the facts and are not all that worried, I don't quite think that's true, because if you look at what's happened with like Iraq, it took a long time, but most people now believe that Bela Blair was lying, and that's why he's gone, really.
Yeah.
So I think things can change.
I absolutely agree with that.
And if we lose our belief in that, then we might as well go.
No. I would. You know, I. There is, as it were, there are the facts of the matter as regards 9/11.
I'm not saying it's true, but we have to find out.
No, that some what happened, and whoever planned it, and this is a factual matter. But what I'm suggesting is that there are practical difficulties, and actually the difference between 9/11 and Iraq is instructive, because I think Blair is going because of Iraq. I think it has destroyed his credibility. And I think that a lot of what Brown will do will seek to create distance from Blair as a result of that. We may even see British troops out of Iraq. The political impact of the 9/11 truth movement in the United States, where it's strongest, has been more or less null. And I think this goes back to the differences between them. What they did in the run-up to the Iraq War, they had to do in public. They had to persuade us. They had to persuade people like us. So they couldn't do it in the shadows. They couldn't hide what they were doing in official secrecy. But what they did or didn't do in 9/11 is, as I say, kind of the heart of darkness. It's about the hardest thing to kind of hope to penetrate.
That is true. But the story that they gave us was a public story, that there were 19 people who got on these planes and blew up these towers. I mean, that is the public story, isn't it? So there is a public...
Yeah, but what killed them on Iraq was that they made factual claims about weapons of mass destruction that proved to be false. And they weren't doing that nudge, nudge, wink, wink. They had to go on telly and say it. You know, and the Colin Powell stuff in the UN was kind of evidence of that. So you wanted to ask a question?
I was just kind of reflecting on what that guy said about information overload generally.
Sure.
Because at the moment I'm trying to script a small DVD about 7/7,
mm-hmm.
which is just like a quarter of 7/7, which is the bus bomb, because I was the person who has had experience from that
thing.
But what I found is, yes, people saw my site, and as I added more and more information to just feed them and reel them in, I noticed the stats were going up, and then at a certain point, it just dropped off because there was too much on there. So
right.
I had to restructure the whole site
right.
and just pull
right.
back and just break it down and give
yeah.
it to them more
yeah.
simply. So if you do that with film, apply that same structure and logic to film, I think you'll be able to keep their attention spans and keep them involved in a linear
sure.
track rather
sure.
than...
I mean, I hold out a great deal of hope for independent media production and independent public research or research in the public interest. And I think that the more people can talk and share ideas about not only how to conduct research at a high level, there's no reason why members of the public can't conduct research that is every bit as good as what goes on in universities. It's a complete nonsense to imagine that academics have a monopoly on the ability to conduct serious research. But also on this very interesting question about how you present information in such a way that you don't spook people, you don't overload them with information, and you don't put spooky music on it. And can, you know, there are ways of kind of signposting that what you're saying is not terribly serious. And I think that there's a lot we have to learn, really, about that. And I think there's a lot we can learn in media terms from the 9/11 truth movement. I think that they've done their work with a good deal of verve. It's just I'm not convinced that the subject repays the attention that it's given always. Yeah.
It's less a question directed to you and more a question directed to people maybe from the 9/11 truth movement, that I haven't done my homework in this area. You know, I just gathered what's come to me through the mainstream media, through indie media, or through websites I've looked at. And one of the points that I've found interesting, which has come to me from a group called Notes from the Borderland, is that at times elements within the 9/11 truth movement have been maybe less critical of certain ex-Secret Service agents who haven't been entirely open about their past activities in the British state, and particularly their activities surveilling groups that dissented from the consensus, groups, you know, on the left, such as David Shaler, who haven't necessarily been, you know, individuals like Shaler, who haven't been entirely open about their past activity surveilling the dissenting voices, like the people in this room, and who've maybe, that there's a danger that you're being too credulous to certain interest groups, such as Shaler. I'm not expressing this as articulately as I'd like to, but you... But what I'm getting at is that you know, if we're to look at what's gone on over the last 5 years critically, there's a danger that there's certain interest groups that are interested in clouding issues and in creating this strange conspiracy. And I'm not necessarily presenting that, but I'm sort of opening that up as, in my mind, being as credible as the Twin Towers being blown up by anyone else. I don't know.
I would say there, when you walk into this area, there is a huge risk of misinformation, and there are people who trace the history of the 9/11 truth movement and see how concerns about parapolitical links between Al-Qaeda American intelligence and so on has over time metamorphosed under pressure from some quite shady characters into discussions of peak oil or into discussions about whether the towers were brought down by controlled explosions, whether there was a hologram or whatever. And a lot of the 9/11 stories have become a good deal more speculative and a good deal more nerve-wracking over time, and they have a certain sort of surface glitter, a certain sort of appeal, in the same way that if you can prove that it's impossible to fire four shots from the textbook depository, then there must have been a conspiracy. In the same way, if you can prove somehow that the towers were brought down by controlled explosions, then you've radically changed people's perceptions. But I agree with you that there's a great deal of misinformation going on, both conscious misinformation by perhaps by state actors, but also unconscious manipulation, misinformation by entrepreneurs, effectively. You know, if you want to create something telegenic, then going on about deep background is not very telegenic.
But does it, I mean, and it's not necessarily opening up the question to you, but to the group generally, is there not a danger that politically might there not be certain interest groups within the state who like the idea that we're, maybe it was a cock-up rather than a conspiracy, and if it was a cock-up rather than a conspiracy, aren't there certain interest groups who are interested in preoccupying our minds with the conspiracy rather than something that's much more fundamental, like the conspiracy of how our societies run, or like the reality of other aspects of what's going on in our life, rather than these single events.
There are some, and this is, I think, Professor Stephen Jones is the real kind of academic gap insurance to this, in a way, is that there are some facts about 9/11 that are absolutely irrefutable, and they're not just questions of people's imagination or people's slant or political stance. In fact, I think that's what Chomsky gets very wrong, is he kind of writes off 9/11 as almost like a political stance. And it's like, hold on, it's not about politics. They found molten steel at the base of World Trade Centers 1, 2 and 7. And that steel is so scientifically significant because it's a bit like finding evidence of animal life on Mars.
Well, but do any of us in this room really understand that science?
Well, that's fine, but you've got
to... Do any of us in this room...
That's up to you to educate yourself, because...
No, but do any of us in this room really understand that science from an engineering point of view?
Very simply, right, and this, there are millions of videos on the internet. I encourage you all, if you don't know, to go to YouTube and type in Stephen Jones, because he's a very clever man, and he explains it. He taught physics for all of his life. He was... contracted by the US government to do research into cold fusion technology. He's essentially very well versed in science. And he's pointed out that the maximum burning temperature of aviation fuel, even with oxygen applied to it, is 800 degrees Celsius. He's also pointed out that the maximum melting temperature of structural steel is 1500 degrees Celsius. And they're very far apart from one another. Now, when you take structural steel and you take petrol, even with an oxygen source, and you burn it as much as you can, there is no way on God's earth you will ever create molten steel.
No,
okay?
They
found molten steel at the base of 1, 2, and 7. Well, let me tell you something. A NASA satellite flew over 5 days off.
I think there's a way to sidestep this.
Well, my point
which is really, if none of us are structural engineers.
Plus, there's
and I don't
a lot
know
of other stuff
are.
Burning there than petrol.
Okay, well, so.
But whatever. We don't need
Hi,
to open up.
I'm listening to Lopa. I'm not even supposed to open my mouth here, you know. But I'm
go for it.
A lot of the time, you know, we depend so much on experts to be kind of like the sole proprietors of any kind of information and so on. And a lot of the time, experts, the people in universities and so on, actually the guys who are actually making the perpetrators have more credibility. They're just like, I mean, a lot of what's going on in these research establishments, a lot of what the experts are saying, if you see the knee-jerk reaction to establishment stances and stuff beyond any possibility of credibility, they will take, it's like the press being prostitutes and them, these academics, I'm sorry,
well,
for academics' presence and so on.
Job,
yeah, no, I know about scholars for 9/11 truth and so on. I know about the molten... it's at 3,000 degrees, like all 6 weeks afterwards. There's so many professors and so many highly placed people that are putting themselves in and their jobs and their futures and their cushy existences in jeopardy in order to point these things out and to break it down even for the least informed of us. And if we decide that we want to make the effort to actually educate ourselves and become a little more better informed, it's a lot better than sitting down being sceptical and doing no research. Do your research and be well done. By the way, for all the CIA and FBI, or sorry, your local guys are MI5 or for whoever is in here, because you've got to expect that and things.
Yeah,
you've got some pussies in here going to be telling the authorities what's going on. Could be me.
I want to try to discuss this without opening up that can of worms, because you sound like you've done your homework a lot more than I have, okay? And I respect that, and I'm not trying to disrespect that. What I'm trying to do is open up...
No, I'm not,
because I'm acknowledging I haven't done my homework, and seriously, I don't know what the fuck happened on September the 11th. All I know is I came home from a Whole Food shop in South Manchester to my house in Mossside, and my housemate, who wasn't as political as everyone else in the house, was watching it happening, and I was like, holy shit. And she was like, yeah, they think it might have been the anti-capitalist movement. And I was like, no, I think it might be some Muslim fundamentalist kids who are a bit angry from the Middle East. That was my wild guess. I'm not saying that I'm right and that it wasn't some plot by the American establishment. I don't fucking know, and I don't claim to know. But no, please let me finish my point. I know I've gone on, I've spoken more than I should have. But all I'm getting at is that I think that as much as we take on board what you're saying, I think it's really important, if you're coming from the other side of the equation from where I'm coming from, that we need to take on board that there's also interest groups who are associated with the secret state in Britain who have an interest. You know, people who have... put yourself in my shoes, right? I've been knocking around with anarchists, and I've got somebody like with a microphone radioing me while I say that. All right? Trust him as it happens. But... you know what I mean? And you've got somebody coming... You've got people like David Shaler who've been part of the secret state, who've been surveilling the community that I come out of, who've then associated themselves with 9/11 Truth. They've associated themselves with 9/11 Truth. And 9/11 Truth... I'm not saying that like you're some sort of homogenous group where people can't disagree with David Shaler, but also feel that we need to get to the bottom of this. But what I want to open up is the idea that maybe the people are a bit more skeptical about what happened at 9/11 than how reliable some of the people who are engaging with 9/11 Truth are. Some people have got an agenda to promote.
I would like to just say something.
Sure.
I get your point entirely, because I think that the internet, and I think that is the way it is going to go. I think 40 years ago you were saying about JFK, we didn't have the internet. That's the difference. You couldn't spread the information so quickly. The internet allows, and these movements allow them to be infiltrated. You don't know who's in them. Of course not, but at least you know David Shaler was the next spook. You do know that.
Yeah, and we know that he hasn't come
back. Okay. Around. Myself, Daniel wrote a book called The Fourth Bomb. He's got a website about being on the bus on 7/7. Myself and Ant, we run something called July 7th Truth Campaign. We have a website, and very much based on the work we did. All I can ever say is that a good piece of information will get you to ask questions. It will get you to question everything. And once you... I don't know how those towers came down. I don't know how World Trade Center 7 came down. I don't know what made the hole in the Pentagon. I'm not a scientist. I do know now that it didn't happen the way we were told it did. And that's all you can do, is open your mind and start to see things differently. Not seeing, you know, you're shown a spectacle and you're given a narrative and you're told that's what it is. A good film will say to you, question it all, question everything. And that should be your starting point. And that's all I have to say.
Say something for a while.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you were talking about infiltration and misinformation and all the rest of it, and 9/11 Truth is, it's not a homogenous group at all, being kind of prejudiced. In my experience of talking to people with those kind of views, they're the least credulous people a lot of them you'd ever meet. and question everything and are always suspicious that the room is full of spies and all the rest of it. So I don't think you need to worry about that. The idea that that some parts of the state find it interesting for conspiracy theorists to be bubbling over, I think that's ridiculous. Because people who come across this kind of information, in my experience, start, as you say, questioning everything. And lots of things which they took for granted before, that the BBC was telling the truth about the sport, the news and everything else. A lot of those things go out the window.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't really worry about that if I were you. And if BBC can make conspiracy files, which is a piece of crap, then everybody got to learn sometime can be flawed as well, and we'll make better films and reach more people. And I don't think it's harping on about 9/11 in films on the internet or so is a waste of time, because when you look at the polls and what Americans, for example, are feeling on this issue, they don't have anyone to vote for who's going to be honest and respectable.
No.
So the democratic process has been neutralized. But what people are thinking and feeling on the ground has been shifted by the activities of people like ourselves who've made little films or little podcasts or whatever else. So it's not futile activity.
That's right. Over that way.
I speak as an old fella. Who lived over 50 years of all the various conflicts in the world, and when we do find out truth about things, what do we do with it? If this does come out, the truth about 9/11, 7/7, Blair's lies and all the rest of it, what are we going to do with it? Are we just going to frighten ourselves the rest of our lives? Are we going to tell the next generation, be very careful, learn something from it? Because we never learn anything. That's my point. I fell asleep in half of all that because it's all bollocks.
Regarding David Shaler, my personal view of him is that he's essentially peddling disinformation with his theories that the planes that hit the World Trade Center weren't planes, they were missiles cloaked in holograms, and so on and so forth. And I see parallels with Judy Woods, Morgan Reynolds and other people that have equally ridiculous claims about space beam weaponry bringing down the towers and CGI being used to manipulate the images and there weren't planes on the day and so on and so forth. I don't know if these people really believe in what they're doing and what they're saying or if they're being paid to do it. I've got no idea. But what I think is clear is that it's disinformation that's actually damaging and hindering any attempts to kind of get to the truth of what happened, because it just puts people off. People think, oh, this is all crazy. What I was wanting to ask Dan is about the question of the left and September the 11th. And I don't know how familiar you are with the UK left, but it's an issue that most people won't touch with a barge pole.
Yeah.
The two responses I think that I'm aware of are, one, it's impossible, you're mad. There is no way, it would have been too big a conspiracy. It's absolutely 100% completely impossible that it was anything other than the official story. That's one response I get from the left. The second response is, so what? It's nothing. 3,000 dead, drop in the ocean, 30 million probably killed by US imperialism since the Second World War. It's racist to even look into it because these were mostly white people that killed in America. The kind of Ward Churchill argument, you know, these were little Eichmanns, these were the technocrats of the empire, that they died, you know, in an action against a genocidal imperialist empire. Is, you know, they had it coming, is kind of, you know, Ward Churchill's position. And those are the kind of the two responses. But mostly the left won't engage with it. I mean, the only kind of left group I'm aware of that will even kind of touch on the issue is kind of World Socialist website, and they say the role of the US intelligence agencies in September 11th is something that we do not yet know the truth about. That's as far as they'll go. Recently, George Galloway went a bit further in his interview with William Rodriguez, the last survivor from the World Trade Center, the caretaker, and he kind of
admitted that he had, well, he said that he had been wrong in the past in kind of having a go at people for being conspiracy theorists, and he thought that was an inappropriate term, and he was quite supportive of William Rodriguez and his kind of tour of Europe. But elsewhere, I mean, you know, the left won't touch it. And why is that? And why?
Well, I think historically, interesting, as it were, discrete conspiracies has been associated with the political right, going a long way back. The conspiratorial explanations of history are found in the French Revolution, for example, where counter-revolutionaries claimed that it was a cabal of Freemasons and Enlightenment thinkers who were responsible for it. The JFK movement was tangled up in right-wing politics in the United States. John Birch Society was heavily involved in it. There's a tradition of defending the Republic against enemies foreign and domestic that take a conspiratorial hue. So I think that some of that, as it were, inherited anxiety about what looked like cabal-based explanations plays a part in a lot of people's thinking on the left. I think also that people are very nervous about wandering into this kind of soup of more or less credible, more or less sourced facts. Someone like Chomsky builds his cases on the basis of a published documentary record. And if you're talking about 9/11, if what happened is, if there's a, as it were, an alternative explanation as to what happened that is true, it's an extra institutional explanation. It's not people writing memos to each other saying, must remember to book 17 tickets for these guys at work. It will be taking place off the books. And so that makes for a very uncomfortable place for people like Chomsky, who've been accused throughout his career of being a conspiracy theorist. He works very hard to establish the documentary base of what he says, precisely to diffuse that allegation. If he stands up and say, well, there are issues about 9/11, then his critics will be all over him. So I've had issues with people on the left. I mean, I've talked to people, and my view is that it is a factual matter. I think it's legitimate to investigate it. A lot of people on the left do take that very unpleasant line that the people who died somehow had it coming to them, or it wasn't very significant. And I think that's callous in the extreme. And I certainly don't accept the idea that we shouldn't look at it. I think one of the great tricks that's pulled on us is being told that there are areas that we shouldn't look into. But I think that the areas that we shouldn't look into, the areas that are patrolled, are often patrolled in much more subtle ways. There's a whole area, we touched on this earlier, the whole area of scientific and academic expertise, whole areas of political economy in particular, where we're not supposed to have a view unless we've got a PhD in economics. Well, if you're trying to make a living, then you're an expert on economics, as far as I'm concerned. And we are being constantly, gently escorted away from areas of inquiry that impact on our lives very directly. And I don't think 9/11 is unique in any way in that respect. In some respects, as being touched on, it suits the needs of the entertainment economy much more closely than wading through minutes from the IMF meetings, which is where the real action takes place often.
We're going to begin to draw this to a close. There's a couple of people who have their hands up for a while. We've got another film or two to show, but if people can wander in and out and carry on discussions outside. I'd just like to call the fellow there by the projector.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it seems to me that with this whole 9/11 truth movement, that people seem to expend a lot of energy on trying to establish the facts of what happened on that day. And actually, it's quite a lot more important if you do believe that it was a conspiracy or not. You know, if you believe that people knew that it was going to happen and let it happen, or whether you believe it was completely planned, it doesn't really matter. You should be looking at the reasons why they want something like that to be happen, and you should be looking in and using your energy to campaign against those sort of things, rather than spending all your time trying to establish, like, you know, melting point of steel and all the rest of it, when there's a massive global, you know, sort of picture
which comes into play if you do believe that this is a conspiracy, and surely we should be looking at that rather than, you know, looking at the ins and outs of what happened on the actual date. And you were talking earlier about the reasons behind 9/11, you know, talking about the drug industry and stuff like that. I personally believe that there's all these wider picture. You didn't necessarily mention that, but it kind of triggered my mind. No, but I mean, you know, there's just a wider thing that I think needs to be looked into and should be focused on more than, you know, arguing about, you know, planes and missiles and holograms. It's a bit like, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you can caricature the 9/11 truth movement. One has to be careful of caricaturing people. I mean, I think, as you say, lots of legitimate questions about the background, lots of legitimate questions about what happened on the day, and so on. There are massive ongoing criminal conspiracies that take place in, for example, offshore finance. If you want to be a radical researcher, then I would strongly advise you to go and get an accountancy qualification, because that's where the action is. If you want to nail them,
yeah.
It's going on in real time, and it is drug money, and it is, you know, money ripped off from pensioners and Christ knows who that's being swilled around in this offshore system.
Like Capone.
Say again?
Like Capone, that's how they got Capone on tax.
Well, you're never going to get them banged to rights on it, but you can tell a story about how the global economy works, which is a lot more convincing than the stuff you hear in the FT.
I mean,
that was a cheap shot.
It's something that has been said before in this debate, but I don't think I've heard it sort of clearly expressed this evening. It's been alluded to. The fact that governments collude in mass murder is nothing new. It's been proven time and time and time again. I do personally have a slight problem with some of the evangelical zeal of the 9/11 truth movement. I don't see personally what difference it would make other than sacking a bunch of people if it was proven that there was a plot. I don't think the people will rise up and take control of their own countries. I don't think it will create a revolution. I don't think it will result in some new order by finding some people complicit in collaborating in something which was mass murder. It's been proven time and time again through history or recent history that governments do this. You know, nobody should be shocked and surprised that governments are capable of this. It's what they do. They're scum, quite frankly. You know, and I have extreme respect for an awful lot of people that are working on 9/11. I really do. But I do have this fear that some of us who have exactly the same priorities politically or exactly the same outlook or exactly the same hopes for humanity are actually squabbling amongst ourselves over this rather than addressing what we can do to create a system or create a new movement that actually creates the alternative. I don't think it is purely a distraction. I think it's incredibly important, but I do worry that it is taking an awful lot of energy from an awful lot of people that could be doing something better.
Let's draw it to a close there. I think you're making a similar point to the guy who went out in disgust earlier, saying, well, who cares, you know, what do we do? So maybe some of us can go and carry on the discussions further outside.
Can I just make a very quick comment? Dan's book is on sale here, £15 in the shop, but we're selling it £10, so if anyone wants to come up with it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.